Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. Wonderful to have all of you here today. We're going to talk about some of the missed opportunities, I think, to focus on what's really ailing West Coast cities, Seattle. We have a story out of Portland today. Seattle Mayor Bruce Harrell, I almost said Ed Murray. Wow, that's a blast from the past. Seattle Mayor Bruce Harrell outlined what they're calling a downtown activation plan in Seattle. There's some good things about it. There are some things about it that don't make a lick of sense to me. In Unbelievable, I'm going to talk about a comment from Washington's Congresswoman representing the Seattle area, Pramila Jayapal, that just proves that you have politicians, frankly, on both sides that continue to focus on red meat, shiny objects that they think will appease their base. To the detriment of the places that they serve, of the areas that they serve. So we're going to dive into that. And also Elon Musk, he had an interview with Tucker Carlson, which I was very excited about just because those are two very interesting men. And there were a couple really good revelations out of it, including that Elon Musk wants me to run for president. Specifically, he's talking about me running for the presidency, which I'm not old enough yet. So maybe later, Elon. So we'll dive into all of that. Nicole, hello.
Hi, Brandi.
How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing okay.
Good.
You know, it's
your
a good day.
Your hair looks beautiful.
You know, thank you. We were having a little debate about whether I should do my hair like this today, and
yeah.
I just kind of went for it.
Why not?
The show yesterday was really interesting. I felt like we covered just so much. We had Jonathan Cho on the show yesterday, and he talked about he was going down right before we had him on to this press conference from Seattle Mayor Bruce Harrell. And we're going to follow up on what came of that press conference from the mayor of Seattle just in a moment. But I want to build up to that with just what's happening in some of these West Coast cities like Seattle, like Portland, obviously much of California is dealing with the same crises. But I saw this article in the Seattle Times today talking about the rise in auto theft. Not a surprise for any of us who care to pay attention. But according to the Seattle Times, auto theft's up 73% in Seattle since the start of the pandemic, which Nicole and I were talking. We don't really love that they have to tie it to the pandemic. I think there's a lot of other things going on. Do I think pandemic issues contributed to part of it? Sure. But the depolicing, the laws that prevent police from pursuing violent criminals, I mean, you don't think that has a little bit more to do with it than the pandemic? But anyway, in this article, they have this little graphic that says that in Seattle, the percentage of increase, ninth highest of any city in the country. Ninth highest of any city in the country. And, you know, politicians, and we saw this during the police pursuit debate this year, they wanted to say, Democrats saying, oh, this is a nationwide phenomenon. It's not an issue in Washington State. But routinely, Seattle, Washington State ranks among the worst when it comes to increases in crime, increases in violent crime, increase in homicides, increase in motor vehicle theft. The only cities worse than us, again, by a percentage of increase from what they've seen from 2019 to 2022, St. Louis, Minneapolis, Norfolk, Milwaukee, Chicago, Memphis, Denver, and Aurora, Colorado. Yeah, in Aurora, Colorado, 192%. Car theft is up there. So is Seattle as bad as Aurora, Colorado? No, and it'd be interesting to look into what's happening in Colorado that's contributing to that. But we have a 73% increase in motor vehicle theft. And the fact that we are still having a debate, that it's even up for debate in Olympia as to whether we should allow police to pursue people driving a stolen vehicle. You know, Democrats, specifically the progressive wing, wants to say, well, that's just a property crime. I mean, look what it's doing to our communities. It's absolutely absurd. So that's happening in Seattle. Again, not a surprise that we're seeing those statistics, but I want to build up slowly to what the mayor of Seattle talked about yesterday. There was a story out of Portland. Again, you have Portland, which has nearly identical politics to Seattle. Not a surprise that Portland is seeing a lot of the same issues that we're seeing in Seattle around homelessness, crime, substance abuse. REI Portland. So REI has a big shop in downtown Portland, and they announced that they're going to close. I'll read their statement on it because you're not going to be surprised at the reasons why. But first, let me just read you a couple tweets that cracked me up about Portland. One of them said, "You can't blame this one on malignant corporatism. It's a cooperative. Of course, REI is a cooperative. And then this other one, not having an REI in Portland would be like not having a NASCAR track in Alabama. And that's kind of true. When I think of REI, I think of like Seattle and Portland and how much people love REI and the outdoors. And so losing REI is a big deal in Portland. And I think it sends a really important message. So let's read what REI said in its statement. So we are sad to share that our store in Portland's Pearl District will close early next year. For nearly 20 years, REI has proudly served our members in the outdoor community from this location. We've had a presence in Oregon for over half of our 85-year history, opening our third store nationally at Jansen Beach in 1976. The safety of our employees, members, and customers is always our number one priority. In recent years, Portland has been dealing with increased crime in our neighborhood and beyond. Last year, REI Portland had its highest number of break-ins and thefts in two decades, despite actions to provide extra security. And then they go on to say they've also outgrown the location. They can't provide the level of customer and employee experience we strive for at REI. For these reasons, we're no longer confident in our ability to serve you in this location. So when you think about that, you know, company with an 84-year history has been through all seasons in Seattle and Portland when it comes to issues that we've dealt with. And now they're saying we cannot, even investing in additional security, keep our employees and our customers safe in the Pearl District in Portland. And so now REI is closing its doors. And they're just the latest company. I mean, how many Seattle-based companies have we heard just close up shop? We heard Walmart, you know, pulling out of Chicago. There's a reason why, one, there's a safety issue, but two, you know, Walmart in Chicago, for instance, talked about how much theft, you know, even a company like Walmart that is equipped to deal with much more theft and losses than any other business. Even a company like Walmart, there's too much theft for it to continue in Chicago. And you're seeing, you know, a lot of that happen in Seattle as well. And so that is sort of the background for Seattle Mayor Bruce Harrell coming out yesterday and announcing immediate actions to revitalize downtown. And I will say before I'm going to have some things that are critical of Seattle's mayor about this plan, some of my confusion about the common sense behind a few of the proponents of it. But let's just allow him to talk about just the general gist of what he's planning to do for downtown Seattle.
We said from the beginning that if our downtown doesn't feel safe, it isn't safe, we will fail as a city. I just believe that. And the fentanyl crisis on our streets is causing death and disorder. I can't mince words there. We have an obligation to do more from those suffering from substance abuse disorder for all of our neighbors. Fentanyl crisis is just playing out on our streets, and we see it every single day. It's playing out in our neighborhoods. We all are affected by this. There's no one that goes affected. Our executive order cites many statistics. 589 overdose deaths in Seattle in 2022, with the majority attributed to fentanyl and methamphetamines, compared to only 342 in 2021. But even 342 was alarming. That was an increase of 72%. Overdose is the leading cause of unintentional fatal injury in King County. And it's our most vulnerable who are impacted, disproportionately living unsheltered. Quite frankly, this is tragic. I'm reading some material in the Seattle Times right now, and when I read these statistics and I read what we're seeing, many of you, it may be academic. I'm reading about families that I grew up with. I'm reading about families that whose parents that I know. And so as mayor, I have a sense of urgency that I don't know what other people feel. I don't compare myself in that sense. I just know that this is real work, that I'm put in this position for a reason, and one of those reasons to address this crisis. And it doesn't start with me pointing the finger at anyone failing in their job. I'm in this together. These numbers are staggering of what's coming into our city. Okay? And yeah, point the finger at me if you like, but I have a great team. I consider everyone in this room part of our team, trying to get this work done.
Yeah. And look, I'll say for Seattle Mayor Bruce Harrell, I'm glad he's at least acknowledging what the issues are. You know, substance abuse is one of the primary issues plaguing downtown Seattle. The same is true in Portland. The same is true in places like LA and California. The substance abuse is leading to crime. People who are downtown using drugs, where are they going to get the money for those narcotics? It's just common sense, right? You go down there, you see the stolen merchandise bazaars that they take from businesses big and small down there. The drug crisis and addressing the drug crisis is the issue. And I'm glad to at least hear a mayor who, whatever the far left fringe in Seattle be damned, wants to actually acknowledge what the issue is. Now, you know, I have some questions about whether aspects of this are going to be effective, but here's Mayor Bruce Harrell talking about what he's calling on the drug front, a two-pronged approach.
Yes, a law enforcement approach to disrupt the distribution and sale of synthetic drugs and arrest and hold accountable narcotics traffickers. And I'll read that again. I'm not shy to read it. A law enforcement approach to disrupt the distribution and sale of synthetic drugs and arrest and hold accountable narcotics traffickers. Okay?
Applause.
And that's coupled with and part of an evidence-based public health approach to support people struggling with addiction to these dangerous substances.
Yeah. And look, I do. It's kind of sad that we're in a place where politics is so skewed in Seattle, where he has to feel like he's exhibiting bravery by saying that, yeah, we have to go out and we have to actually arrest people who are dealing drugs. Like, it shouldn't take bravery in Seattle to do that, where he has to make a point to repeat it and say, I'm not shy to say this. I'm not shy to say this. Now, we'll dive more into what the law enforcement effort to disrupt the people who are actually dealing these drugs looks like under his plan. But when he talks about that second approach, you know, trying to go out and make sure that people are getting treatment, that you're not just saying here's a law enforcement effort, but on the back end, you know, people are getting treatment and they're getting better. Because if that's not the case, then what are we even doing? But I had to laugh at one of the tactics that the city of Seattle plans to employ to earn the trust of some of these drug addicts.
We will do what makes sense to get people into treatment. We will do what makes sense to get people in treatment. One part of the program are low-dollar gift cards, as an example. But that is part of a philosophy to do the outreach and to develop the relationships such that people realize if they don't change their way, they will die.
Help me understand how giving people low dollar gift cards, you think that it's going to build relationships so that one time when you come talk to them, they'll just snap out of it and say, yeah, I want access to services. First of all, they're going to trade the low dollar gift cards for drugs. Okay, they're going to trade them for drugs. And I love how he starts that by saying, we're going to do things that will work. We're going to do things that's not going to work. So it's that kind of stuff that just scares the absolute hell out of me, that it's like, on one hand, he's saying, yeah, we want to actually arrest people who are dealing drugs. And on the other hand, he's like, and then we're going to give people gift cards. And we're going to think that that's going to somehow ingratiate ourselves to them so that we can go and get them into services. And they're definitely not going to give those or trade those low dollar gift cards for narcotics. You can get drugs on our street, fentanyl, for a couple bucks. You can get a hit for like a couple bucks. And so you might say they're low dollar gift cards, so you're not incentivizing them to try to trade them or steal them from each other, et cetera. But even if you give them a $5 gift card to what also, like what is it going to be for? They're going to still be able to trade it for drugs. It doesn't help the situation. So that's absolutely bizarre. But just a couple things on the mayor's strategy that I want to break down and express kind of my concerns and my hesitancy about. Again, I'm glad he's acknowledging it, but acknowledging it is only part of a robust solution. I have been in Seattle long enough to know that there have been many efforts to revitalize downtown. If I hear the phrase revitalize downtown in a mayoral plan one more time, I'm going to throw up because we've been through it. We had 9.5 blocks where SPD went in there and they did this huge operation in partnership with the feds, and they arrested a bunch of drug dealers. And they, you know, were trying to revitalize the area by activating some of the parks, by doing simple things like putting tables and chairs and games and stuff in Westlake Park. And I will tell you, it worked for about 6 months. And then once you pulled that influx of resources out of the area, it was like moth to a flame. And they came back, and then it got worse. And so we've seen these seasons. You know, we've had Olga Sagan, who's the owner of Piroshki Piroshki Bakery in Seattle. She opened up another location on 3rd Avenue during what was billed around 2018 as a Pike Pine Renaissance, where they were going to have a renaissance for the Pike Pine Corridor, open new businesses, improve the area, beautify the area. Look at it now. It's probably one of the worst blocks in the entire nation when it comes to crime and substance abuse and disorder. So bad that Olga Sagan had to temporarily close her doors at that location because there kept being shootings down the street at the McDonald's from hell. And so, you know, I want the best for Seattle, and I wish Mayor Bruce Harrell well in these endeavors. But I remain very skeptical that, one, we have the resources to be able to keep up an enhanced police presence down there. After years of vilification, a third of the Seattle police force has been depleted. How do you expect to keep up a level of a police presence there that's going to make a difference in the long term, while also responding to life or death 911 calls? I just don't see how it's feasible. And you might be saying, well, what would you do, Brandy? What would you do? Look, I think that there has to be an all-in effort from every single person in a position of power in King County, in Seattle, to say we're going to enforce every law we have on the books to the fullest extent. To the fullest extent. Those are felonies. Those are misdemeanors. Those are citations. Yeah, I do think police should be down there harassing people who are drinking beer out of a brown paper bag. Call me crazy, but we have to restore law and order to that area. And I know people are like, oh, those are, you know, low-level crimes. That is what is contributing to this. And you really have to be down there in force to be able to send a message that that kind of behavior isn't going to be tolerated anymore. And I know there's going to be some far leftists who don't like that, who don't like the harassment of the homeless or whatever it is. But we have to get to a place where they don't feel comfortable doing drugs down there, selling drugs down there, stealing stuff from Target and selling it on the sidewalk. I have been two times. Someone has tried to sell me a brand new vacuum cleaner in downtown Seattle. Two times. The first time I was kind of tempted because it was a nice Dyson. And I was like, I wonder how much they want for that. Because if it's like $50, I might jump on that. I'm kidding. I would never buy stolen merchandise. But look, they want to go for these big operations and these big ticket things. And one of the things that the mayor says he's going to do is direct the Seattle Police Department to prioritize efforts to disrupt the distribution and sale of narcotics in concert with other law enforcement partners, furthering enhanced collaboration between the Seattle City Attorney's Office, King County Prosecutor's Office, the United States Attorney, the DEA, FBI, and Department of Homeland Security. Like, that sounds like a big comprehensive effort to go after people who are peddling these drugs, and I think that's great. But I think we lose sight. You've got these, and the title of this episode is Put Down the Shiny Objects for a reason. This is going to be a theme of this episode. I think you have these big shiny objects, and you kind of lose track of there's a lot of really low-level crimes that we ought to be going after, throwing the book at, so you make it uncomfortable every single day for them to be engaging in that sort of behavior downtown. And honestly, I don't know if this is even allowed. Can Seattle ask for like the state patrol or the National Guard to come in? They did during Chaz Chop during the summer of 2020.
I don't know if that's because the pandemic, like the emergency, had been enacted.
State of emergency?
I don't know.
I mean, all I'm saying is that, and I'm not saying that we need like, I want like people in fatigues, like a police state or whatever. Mm-hmm. But even if you had a presence, you know, they during Chaz Chop, and this is totally off the top of my head. I wasn't going to talk about this. So hopefully I don't talk myself into a corner. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they sent him down there unarmed during the riots, which was silly. But if you just have an increased presence of people in uniform on these blocks saying, we're going to keep the peace, we're going to keep the peace down here for as long as we possibly can, I think that it's to the emergency, the public safety emergency is to the point where I would be in support of that. I'm not saying I want a military police state constantly patrolling the streets of Seattle, but we need to get in there and we need to get it actually cleared.
It seems like our the staffing level at SPD is to the point where that would almost be considered an emergency in its own, right?
I 100% agree.
I think that giving them some help makes sense.
Would be helpful. So, again, I wish the mayor all the best. I mean, I think he's saying all the right things, but if you don't have buy-in from every single level, then it's just not going to work. I think he has buy-in from the city attorney's office. I'm not sure about the new King County prosecutor. Hopefully he has buy-in from her, the DEA, the FBI. I agree with going after the drug pushers. I think that's good. But I still want to hear more from the mayor, from the King County executive, from the governor, about going after the cartel, about trying to stop these drugs before they even enter Washington State, trying to push the Biden administration to say, hey, we have hundreds of people that are overdosing on our streets every single month by using drugs that are coming here from Mexico. We need your help, Mr. President, to save lives in our community. We need your help, Mr. President, to save our cities. And you just don't see them doing that. And that to me is one of the true shames of all of this. So best of luck to the mayor. I don't think your gift card idea is going to work. I don't think your gift card idea is going to work. He also says that he's going to hope to fill up to 20 vacant storefronts by early summer. That's great. I know he's planning on prioritizing BIPOC business owners, which, mayor, whoever wants one of those storefronts, I would just give it to them. Even if their skin pigmentation isn't what you're looking for, I don't think you can really afford to be picky. He also says he's going to increase opportunities for food truck operators, pop-up food vendors, and, oh, I just read this. You put this note in there. Request the state's Liquor and Cannabis Board to issue sip and stroll permits for first Thursday art walks.
Do they really need a permit? You can pretty much do whatever you want down there.
Yeah, you're saying that if I want to sip and stroll with a glass of wine in downtown Seattle, I need a permit? And I'm not sure that art walks in downtown while I'm walking around drinking is the safest activity right now. So maybe wait till you clean it up a little bit and then do some sip and stroll art walks.
I do like the idea. It sounds fun.
In a different city.
In a different area.
In Edmonds.
Yes.
In Kirkland, in Bellevue.
Right.
Not in downtown Seattle.
Not right now. Mm-mm. Mm-mm.
All right. So we're going to continue with our put down the shiny objects theme in just a moment. But first, let me tell you about one of our wonderful sponsors, Wes Jones of sellwithwes.com. If you are wanting to sell your home, I heard a lot of people moving out of state. I just talked to somebody the other day, moved to Florida. Bless you. I'm very jealous. I'm not ready to give up on Washington yet. But if I were, that's probably where I would go. Sell with Wes. Wes Jones & Associates has a really innovative marketing strategy for trying to get you the best possible offer on your home, not only marketing it locally, but also internationally. And in our conversations, he says he is seeing a little window of opportunity right now where the market has just been up and down. And he says right now he is seeing some folks who are getting multiple offers, who are getting cash offers again. It's certainly isn't the market that it was a couple years ago, but that doesn't mean that it can't be a good time if you've got the right real estate agents. So again, check out sellwithwes.com. That's sellwithwes.com. If you're not sure if it's the right time to sell your home, maybe you have some leeway for, you could hold on a little longer. Wes will tell you and give you some advice on kind of where the market's at and what the best solution might be for you. So sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. Okay, getting back to our put down the shiny objects, that is my message to Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal of Washington, and I shall deliver it in our segment, Unbelievable. So Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal and other Democrats continue to focus on issues that they think will win them headlines, issues that they think will be big political wins for them when it comes to election year and when it comes to their base, but issues that account for such a small, almost non-existent fraction of the problems that are going on in their districts. And this was Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal, a speech she gave on the floor of the House a couple days ago. But I want you to think about everything we just covered. Everything. She represents the congressional district that includes Seattle and Washington, in Washington State. So I want you to think about all the problems Bruce Harrell just talked about, the hundreds of overdoses that are happening on the streets of Seattle, the record crime rates, the 73% increase in motor vehicle thefts. And I want you to listen to what Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal is so fired up about in Washington, D.C.
Today, I dare my Republican colleagues to stop looking away. Stop ignoring the tragedy that is faced by people across this country. Stop ignoring the tragedy of your own constituents who have lost loved ones and family members in shootings with assault weapons. Stop ignoring the shooting in Clackamas, Oregon in 2012 that killed two people with an AR-15, the shooting with an assault weapon in Dayton in 2019 that killed 9 people and injured 17, the shooting in Marathon County, Wisconsin in 2017 with an assault weapon that killed 4 people. These are all in Republican colleagues' districts. It is our duty to stop these killings. And the assault weapons ban will prevent mass shootings like the ones that our districts, our friends, our families have faced by prohibiting the possession, the manufacture, the transfer, or the sale of assault weapons. And it is shameful to resist or even hesitate to take action to stop the use of these weapons of war in mass shootings of civilians. So for every person who says, I have a right to defend, I say to you, we have a right to live. And your right to defend with a weapon of war does not obliterate our right to live.
Okay, wow. Wow. There's a lot that needs to be said about that clip. And I'll start with what she said at the end, that your right to defend yourself with a weapon of war does not obliterate her right to live. And she's right, it doesn't. If you're using a gun that you're legally allowed to have to defend yourself when you're legally allowed to defend yourself, you're not interfering with anyone else's right to live. You're exercising your right to defend yourself. So that's just ridiculous on its face. But when she's sitting there going through shootings that have happened with an AR-15 in the districts of her Republican colleagues, going back to 2017, 2018, talking about these are killings that have happened in districts represented by Republicans. Congresswoman, what about the killings that are happening on the streets of your district at record levels? No, they're not happening with an AR-15. They're not happening with an AK-47. Homicides in your district, Congresswoman, as you're calling out your colleagues from Ohio for shootings that happened years ago, homicides in your district have skyrocketed. Violent crime in your district is up more than 50%. Overdoses in your district, as we just heard from the mayor of Seattle, are at crisis levels. People are dying on the streets of your district from fentanyl that is brought here by the Mexican drug cartel through a border that you refuse to acknowledge is porous. It's unbelievable to me, the disconnect, that she picks up these shiny objects because she wants to score political points, and she ignores the everyday reality in her own district. Frankly, Congresswoman, and if she watches this, I like her very much as a person. She and I get along wonderfully. And I haven't had an opportunity to sit down with her as of late since I left Fox 13. But she and I have never had anything but a wonderful, cordial relationship. But Congresswoman, it is shameful for you to try to put your Republican colleagues on blast for a shooting that might have happened in their district 5 years ago. Well, you have shootings happening at record levels on the streets of your own district. You didn't mention that there. You didn't mention the record homicide rates. You didn't mention, you know, we're not talking about deaths, but auto thefts up 73% in the city that you represent in Congress. How convenient for you. How convenient for you to point to what's happening in the districts of your Republican colleagues and completely ignore and take no responsibility for what's happening on the streets of your own district. How convenient for you. You talking about the need to save people's lives from deadly drugs and the deterioration of downtown might not get you as many headlines nationally. It might not get you on CNN or MSNBC. Like talking about banning the sale of so-called weapons of war. I know that makes a wonderful headline. But you have a commitment to serve the people of your district in Washington State. And I promise you that deaths by assault weapon account for less than one half of 1%, probably less than that, of the problems that are happening in the city of Seattle and the problems that are happening in your district. And so to me, when I watch that, and I want to, can we play that back, Nicole? I got to play that again, because I want you, with everything I just said about what's happening in Seattle, to again, listen to the Congresswoman's words, listen to her trying to blame Republicans in other states, in the union, for not doing enough to stop violence, for not doing enough to prevent homicides.
Today, I dare my Republican colleagues to stop looking away. Stop ignoring the tragedy that is faced by people across this country. Stop ignoring the tragedy of your own constituents who have lost loved ones and family members in shootings with assault weapons. Stop ignoring the shooting in Clackamas, Oregon in 2012 that killed two people with an AR-15, the shooting with an assault weapon in Dayton in 2019 that killed 9 people and injured 17, the shooting in Marathon County, Wisconsin in 2017 with an assault weapon that killed 4 people. These are all in Republican colleagues' districts. It is our duty to stop these killings. And the assault weapons ban will prevent mass shootings like the ones that our districts, our friends, our families have faced by prohibiting the possession, the manufacture, the transfer, or the sale of assault weapons. And it is shameful to resist or even hesitate to take action to stop the use of these weapons of war in mass shootings of civilians. So for every person who says, I have a right to defend, I say to you, we have a right to live. And your right to defend with a weapon of war does not obliterate our right to live.
Yeah. Congresswoman, your constituents have a right to live. Your constituents who are being murdered at record rates have a right to live. Innocent people who are being victimized on the streets of your district have a right to live. And so I dare you to stop looking away. I dare you to stop ignoring what's happening to the people you serve. Because it is shameful. You're right. It is shameful. And it is, quite frankly, unbelievable to me that you can say what you just said with a straight face. All right. As we've been talking about on the podcast, we have a great offer for small businesses from one of our awesome sponsors, MethodWorks Consulting. If you have a small business, maybe you have 5 employees or 50 employees, and you're thinking that you need some help with tech, maybe new computers, you need to navigate and get some of your stuff on the cloud, you need to make sure that you have something in place to protect your data and your customers' data, go to methodworks.com, because they are offering a free security review and 1 month of free security monitoring for undivided viewers and listeners. So if you've just been thinking, I mean, like I've been saying, I'm a small business owner now. Tech was not the first thing on my mind when I started. You're focused on growing your business, taking care of your employees, taking care of your customers. So let MethodWorks take care of your tech needs and cash in on that free security review and that 1 month of free security monitoring, because that is an awesome deal. So again, methodworks.com. Make sure to tell them that you heard about them on the Undivided podcast. Okay, let's step outside of Washington State for a moment, see what's happening nationally. Elon Musk did a good interview with Tucker Carlson. They'd been teasing it, and I watched it, and it was pretty good. Two interesting guys sitting down with one another. There were two things that came out of it that I wanted to talk about today. One was, look, you know, ever since Elon took over Twitter and they've been sharing the Twitter files, et cetera, we've been learning a lot about the coordination between Twitter and big tech and government entities. And there was one thing in particular that Elon Musk said that I got to say, as much as when some of the Twitter files came out, I wasn't surprised by some of it. Maybe I'm naive, but this surprised me a little bit, the extent to which, and Elon said he was surprised, the extent to which the government had access to our profiles and our information. Watch.
Various government agencies had effectively had full access to everything that was going on Twitter. Blew my mind. I was not aware of that.
Would that include people's DMs?
Yes.
freaks me out. Now I'm like back through my DMs. I haven't sent out anything horrible in my DMs. But I'm like, I wonder if that means like an active monitoring. It can't be active. I'm assuming that if they were looking for something.
Yeah, I'm assuming it's something. Yeah, if they're investigating someone or something. And yeah, I wonder if that could hold up in court if they, you know, somebody confessed to murder in their DMs and they're like, hey, you confessed right here.
Well, I mean, if you can get like a warrant, right? Like, how did you access that information? And if it's going to be used for law enforcement purposes, it can't be like fruit of the poisonous tree.
But are they saying they don't need a warrant? They just have access. They already have access. But
it's well, free. I think you'd still have to get a warrant to make it admissible in court. But anyway, this is one of the reasons. There's been some stuff Elon has done at Twitter that I don't necessarily agree with. I don't like him labeling the BBC and NPR government, you know, state media, because I think that that conflates them with like Chinese state media, which is a totally different thing. And there's some other elements. I don't like the whole legacy Twitter checks going away and people being able to buy them. I think that's weird to me. But I do like that he has exposed some of the coordination between these private tech companies and the government. And I like to think that he's prioritizing trying to fix that element of Twitter in a way that, you know, where we can all go use it and feel comfortable that the government is not consistently, the government is spying on us all the time, but mm-hmm. at least they're not sliding into our DMs uninvited. The other clip from this interview, Elon Musk apparently wants me to run for president. Specifically, I know for a fact that in this clip we're about to play, he's absolutely talking about me. Listen.
You know, I didn't vote for Donald Trump. I actually voted for Biden. Not saying I'm a huge fan of Biden, because I would think that would probably be inaccurate. You know, we have difficult choices to make in these presidential elections. It's not. I would prefer, frankly, that we put someone, just a normal person, as president, a normal person with common sense, and whose values are smack in the middle of the country. You know, just. You know, center of the normal distribution, and I think they would be great.
Me,
normal.
Choose me. Am I normal?
Common sense. Pretty normal,
relatively speaking.
Yeah. And then common sense.
You know, I think everybody thinks they have common sense, but I'm pretty sure that I actually do.
Right.
And smack in the middle of the country. Now, am I in the center in Seattle? No. But I think if you take the whole country in the political spectrum, I'm probably somewhere in the middle.
Yes.
Seattle's not a good gauge of whether someone is a true moderate. Elon, I'll do it. Let's see, will I be 35? How old am I now? Oh my gosh, how old? I'm 34.
Yeah.
And so technically I turned 35 in July. Obviously, I should go from local podcast host to a candidate for the president of the United States.
There's been more ridiculous.
That seems like a very reasonable jump to me. Yeah. So Elon, totally in. All right, eastsideweightlossclinic.com. We're going to get to your comments coming up in a minute. Eastsideweightlossclinic.com, we've been talking about it. And hey, when I run for the presidency, I'll be much slimmer, you know, which is a good thing because you want, you know, I think people want their presidents to be attractive. Is that unfair to say?
Oh, no, I definitely think. Otherwise, it becomes the focus of the whole thing is saying you're orange or saying you have bad hair or whatever it is.
Yeah, there was a lot of unflattering pictures of Trump that the media would be like, he's overweight. Anyway,
yes.
Wow, back to the commercial. EastsideWeightLossClinic.com, EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. I've lost more than 30 pounds. I lost most of it in just 2 months. Just shedding my COVID weight, which has been amazing. I feel great. If you would like to try the program, I've already heard from some of you who have gotten on it, who have lost 20, even 30 pounds since getting on it at the beginning of the year when we started these endorsements, which is awesome. People ask, like, you know, what's different about it compared to other weight loss plans? I will say that you don't have to do any prepackaged meals. I always think that's weird to include because if you're really talking about weight loss for life, are you going to eat those prepackaged meals for the rest of your life? No. So the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic plan is just real food. You can cook at home. You can eat out. I can always find something at a restaurant to eat. You don't have to go into an office to get weighed, which I like. So no matter where you are in the world, you can do the plan and you have a handy little app that you can talk to Dr. Ryan Coogan and his team on. So visit eastsideweightlossclinic.com. That's eastsideweightlossclinic.com and schedule just a free 15-minute consultation with Dr. Coogan to find out if the program is right for you. Okay, before we get to your questions and comments of the day, we've been doing a little promo swap with another podcast, which I kind of like, and I actually was listening to an episode of this podcast this morning. We are talking about a Based Politics podcast, and in turn, they're going to expose our podcast to their listeners because we definitely have some commonalities. They talk a little more about national issues than we do. So Brad Palumbo and Hannah Cox are co-hosts of Based Politics, and they talk about, you know, obviously the big stories of the week, but also any online viral moments you might have missed out on, a lot of viral moments related to politics. They break it all down from a classically liberal or libertarian perspective, and the show is really fun to listen to. I've had Brad Palumbo on our show before, and so you might be familiar with him just from his appearances on the Undivided podcast. So if you want to join their growing podcast community, you can check out Based Politics Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen, and let me know how you like it. It's always good to expand your horizons, get a little more national news in there as well. Okay, shall we take questions, Nicole? Do you want to join me for questions?
I'm in.
Okay, great. Oh, Bill Biz with a super comment again on YouTube.
Yeah, he likes to super comment.
Love it. Make crime illegal again. I agree. Is it really such a foreign concept just to enforce all the laws we have on the books?
It shouldn't be.
It should not be. And I know you don't want to criminalize poverty or whatever, but how far do we let that go? Do we let people steal from businesses that then suffer to the point where they have to move out because you didn't want to criminalize poverty? It's just stupid.
You're encouraging poverty.
Silly, silly. All right. On Facebook, Trina says, yep, we lock our doors at work and let people in one by one, by appointment only now. Do you remember when we went wedding dress shopping?
Yes.
Oh my God. I was a little annoyed by this. I won't put like the place on blast, but we're down on Fifth Avenue in Seattle.
Yes.
And I have an appointment. Oh, you didn't, weren't there right away. You were late.
A little bit.
Nicole didn't experience this. We show up for our appointment maybe 5 minutes early. And you have to buzz at the door, and there's gates in front of it. So you're looking at wedding dresses, like, through little gates. And they have to come let you in. And I was a little freaked out because I was with my mom. And I was like, I don't want to wait out here on Fifth Avenue to get in. And they didn't come to the door right away because they were on their lunch breaks. So we were just out there. And I was like, should I get back in the car? But, yeah, that's just ridiculous that you can't just walk into a business. You've got to, like, buzz or knock, and they'll come unlock it and let you in.
I don't blame them, though.
Just ridiculous. Lisa says, beware, we are in the midst of a Marxist revolution. Matt says, does Mayor Harrell put the blame on Councilmember Herbold? Or
no,
Councilmember Harrell.
Oh, he's saying Harrell. Mayor.
I have had that conversation. So Bruce Harrell was not only a member of the city council for years, he was also the city council president. And I had talked about that when he was running. You know, he left the city council because he said things had gotten so vitriolic, and then all of a sudden he wants to be mayor. And so, you know, one of the conversations we had was, you know, you were fed up with city government. And now are we to believe that you're not going to be fed up again? But also, there is a good argument to be made that he helped contribute to some of the policies that led to the state of the city. And I will give him credit that when he and I had that conversation, when I was at Fox 13 and he was running as a candidate, I don't think he shied away. I don't think he thought that was an unfair question. But I also think you have to give people room to come around to better ideas. So I think he can have and should take accountability for some of the things that he supported. But if he's going to say, look, I've woken up to the reality that we need to do better, then who am I to say, no, you can't change your mind? That's what we try to do on this podcast, right?
Oh, definitely. But I think Matt's point was, is he taking some responsibility for it? So yes, coming around to a different idea, but also saying, because he pushed for a lot of, you know, depolicing and not as, like, he wanted people staying out of jail. And is that working? I don't know
that he was one of the worst offenders, though.
Oh, I have that on tape.
I mean, I don't think he was the worst offender. He wasn't around during police defunding, so I don't know how he would have voted on all of that. I think that was like
the key.
He wanted
people not to be sent to jail.
Yeah. Okay. Absolutely. Well, but maybe we'll have to pull that clip for another day. I don't think he was the worst offender on the council. I'm not saying he didn't support policies that led to the state of things.
It was the whole council.
But when I sat down with the mayor when I was at Fox 13, we did have this conversation that speaks to that question. And I won't say that he tried to avoid responsibility. I didn't ever get that sense that he was like, oh, no, I'm perfect and I didn't do anything wrong. So
I think it probably goes back to the super comments. Making drugs legal is not working.
Yeah.
So let's make them illegal again.
Yeah. But you have to allow people to come around to the idea that they I'm not saying that he should be totally absolved of responsibility, but I'd have to go back and watch my interview I did with him, because I really felt like he did take some measure of accountability for his own positions. But it's been a while.
Okay.
So don't hold me to that. We'll go back and I'll go look at it. Let me see. Kathy said, making drugs illegal again should be first, in my opinion. Yeah, we have to get a real good, solid fix to the Blake decision and make it a crime again, a serious crime with teeth, to possess illegal drugs. Mm-hmm. If you don't do that, then of course the drug crisis is going to be rampant. We talked about that quite a bit on the show yesterday, how if Democrats just want to push through some weak fix for the Blake decision that's not going to do anything, then I would rather Republicans just help kill it so then it can bounce back to cities to decide how they want to deal with the drug crisis on their own. Because I'd rather at least give common sense mayors the ability to make it a serious, you know, and to actually pursue drug possession cases, than have to abide by some weak law that the state puts in place, and then cities are helpless to do anything else. Okay, let me see here. Chris says, the city of Austin brought in the state police and have made a huge difference doing exactly what you're talking about. They, like Seattle, ran off a third of their police department. I do agree with Nicole. Like, as much as I don't want a police state, I think if you're dealing with an emergency situation and you're missing a third of your police force, when does it rise to the level that you have to bring in reinforcements?
Absolutely.
And I feel like we're at that level. Mm-hmm. If people can't visit there and be safe, if they can't go about and, you know, go to work and be safe, shop and be safe, then what do you do? And, you know, I think about the summer months and having all these tourists from the cruise ships coming in. Mm-hmm. And I'm just terrified. Like, they're coming in. I'm like, do they know what they're getting into?
No.
And so I almost think you need reinforcements. And I would wonder, let's reach out to the mayor's office on that and ask if that's an option or something that has been considered or that they would do. Because I'd be curious what they'd have to say to that.
Okay.
Josie says, your hair looks so cute, Brandy Cruz.
Thank you.
I thought you'd appreciate that. Nicole said I looked like a 60s teacher.
I said teacher. I said I want to put an apple in front of you.
Oh, okay. you're right. They have to enforce the laws. Coming from addiction 20 years ago, looking at serious jail time if caught with even a baggie with just residue in it was so scary. They threw the book at us back then. So many of us got out and got clean. Well, congratulations on being clean, Josie. And you're absolutely right. There has to be some consequences. There has to be a fear of consequences. And that's not just with drug crimes. That's with any type of crime. Right. And that's why you see so much disorder and a 73% increase in the theft of vehicles is there's not a fear of getting caught. They know they can just drive off. So I'm sorry, if you're someone who's living on the fringes of society and you know that there are a lot of types of crimes that you can just flat out get away with, why would you not be a criminal in our state? We're making it so dang easy. Mm-hmm. All right, let me see here. Mike said... Oh, these are just comments on the show, which we like. Finally found you. Missed your take on things. Been following for a week. Doing an outstanding job. Keep up the great work. Thank you, Brandy. No, thank you. Whoop. Thank you. I hope that's not Mike, my fiance, who's saying, oh, no. I finally found you. Where have you been? Robert said, looks like you're trying wedding hair, Brandy. That's funny, because that's what I said. I've got this Angelina Jolie mm-hmm. updo picture that's similar to this. I don't know why I felt like doing an updo today. Christopher said, you speak common sense. Refreshing. Thank you. All right. That's it for comments today. Well, thank you for the comments. What did you say? Well,
oh, there were lots of hair comments. There were lots of similar comments. So yes.
Any compliments for my appearance are welcome. No, no compliments for Nicole's appearance today. Nothing, you guys.
Okay. See, you went all super fancy and I went super cash. So
yeah, you're going to. Okay. Well, it was funny because we were getting ready and I had done my hair and I had a sweatshirt on. Nicole's like, you should have changed before you did your hair because now you got to take your sweatshirt off. And then I was trying on what I should wear today and I had this black dress and I sat down and I'm like, it looks like I'm going to prom.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, I got to put something else on. Anyway, enough of that. Let's get to our closing segment. It is our daily sanity check. In case you didn't think things had truly gotten insane, some news from everyone's favorite congressman in New York's third, George Santos. Is he going to crawl away in shame for all the many lies that he's told about his life? No, he's going to run again. He just announced his bid for re-election to New York's third. He said on Twitter, announcement. I am proudly announcing my bid for re-election to New York's third. This is about taking back our country and restoring greatness back to New York. And then he has a little link where people can donate. And I would really like to know who is insane enough to give George Santos a cent of their money. His campaign released, and again, he's a Republican. If you're not familiar, he's lied about just about every facet of his life. He said he was Jewish, and then he came out and said, no, I said I was Jew-ish. I was Jew-ish. What else did he say? He said, oh my God, there's so many things.
That was the best one, though.
That was one of the best ones just because the tape. But he lied about his employment history. He lied about his education. I mean, the guy is, I'm convinced he is a deep plant. I'm convinced that George Santos is like, who's the comedian that wore the front thong?
Oh,
Borat. Mm-hmm. I'm convinced it's like a Borat type thing. And I don't know the comedian's real name. Somebody will tell us.
Yeah.
I'm convinced it's like a Borat type thing where George Santos is making some sort of docuseries about how he was able to get elected to Congress.
I think that's what people thought about Fetterman as well.
And then reelected to Congress, if that's the case. Mm-hmm. I got to say, the man has cojones because I did not think he would run again.
It's a special form of narcissism, right?
Oh, and it's got to be narcissism.
And then again,
for sure.
I mean, this poor guy. Not poor guy, because he lied, but he probably can't get a job anywhere, right? Who's going to hire him? So he's like, I guess I'll run again.
Yeah. And he says, so his office in the statement said, since Santos took office 100 days ago, he has proven to be a diligent legislator and outspoken critic of the Washington establishment. From setting the bar high with his first bill, the SALT Relief Act, which I have to be honest, I don't know what that stands for. Can you Google that quick? SALT Relief Act. Congressman Santos has introduced and co-sponsored more bills than any other New York freshman member of Congress. Is he the only New York freshman member of Congress? Proving he's here to lead and bring home results for New York, Congressman Santos released a statement saying, as a first-generation American, I am no stranger to the issues affecting my district. I grew up poor with a single mom. See, even when I read that, I'm like, is any of that true? Is he a first-generation American? Did he grow up poor? Did he have a single mom? And thanks to the American dream, a poor boy of immigrant parents in Queens can grow up to serve his community in the halls of Congress. Blah, blah, blah. Did you read out the SALT Act?
Yes. So the bill is an amend to the Internal Revenue Code of 1986 to increase the limitation on the deduction for state and local taxes. State and local taxes is SALT.
SALT. Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Here's the thing. And this is our sanity check for the day. If George Santos wins re-election in New York's third, I give up. I quit. I might actually quit my podcast. We have tried to dedicate ourselves to giving common sense a comeback, which I believe is possible to fix this broken political system of ours. But if George Santos gets another term in Congress, I might just have to admit that we have lost all measure of sanity and that the mission of this show is simply not possible anymore. So please, please, New York's third, prove us wrong. Please. Well, actually, prove us right. Prove us right that our country still has some sanity left. All right, that's it for today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your compliments about my hair. And if you only listen on the podcast, that's your cue to actually watch the show live at noon with us, Monday through Thursday, so you too can see my prom updo, my 60s teacher look. I just needed some glasses.
Yeah.
Although then I think that's bordering on like the beginning of like an adult movie, so maybe I shouldn't do that. Anyway, if you would like to figure out how to watch clips from the show, listen to the podcast, reach out to us with a new tip, or if you want to become a subscriber to the show to support this mission and this movement to give common sense a comeback, you can do that for as little as $5 a month. Find all of it at undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com. And we will see you back here at noon tomorrow.